Normally, a prosecution with no hard evidence would worry the police, but not in Ada. No one panicked. The Pontotoc County Jail was full of potential snitches. The first one they found for Dennis Fritz was a career petty criminal named Cindy McIntosh. Dennis had been strategically moved to a cell closer to Ron so the two could talk. Their feud was over. Dennis had convinced him that he had not confessed. Cindy McIntosh claimed she got close enough to hear the two talk, then notified the police that she had the goods. According to McIntosh, Fritz and Williamson discussed some photographs submitted during the first preliminary hearing. Ron wasn't there, of course, and he was curious about what Dennis had seen. The photos were of the crime scene, and Ron asked Dennis, "Was she, Debbie Carter, on the bed or on the floor?" "The floor," Dennis replied. This, to the police, was clear proof that both men were in the apartment and committed the rape and murder. Bill Peterson was quickly convinced. On September 22nd, he filed a motion to add Cindy McIntosh as a witness for the state. The next snitch was James Riggins, though his career as such was short-lived. Hauled back from prison to face charges in Pontotoc County, Riggins was being returned to his cell one night when he passed another cell. Inside, he heard someone, perhaps Ron, admitting that he killed Debbie Carter, that he had two rape charges up in Tulsa, and that he would beat the murder rap just like he'd walked on the rapes. Riggins wasn't clear who Ron was doing all this confessing to, but in the snitching world, such details were not important. About a month later, Riggins changed his mind. In an interview with the police, he said he was incorrect about Ron Williamson, that in fact the man he heard doing the confessing was Glenn Gore. Confessions were contagious in Ada. On September 23rd, a young drug addict named Ricky Joe Simmons walked into the police department and announced he'd killed Debbie Carter and wanted to talk about it. Dennis Smith and Gary Rogers had no trouble locating a video recorder, and Simmons began his story. He admitted that he had abused drugs for years, his favorite being a homebrew called Crank, which included, among many ingredients, battery acid. He said he had finally kicked drugs, had found God, and had been reading his Bible one December night in 1982. He thought it was 1982, but wasn't sure, and for some strange reason began wandering around Ada on foot. He ran into a girl, presumably Debbie Carter, but he wasn't sure, and gave several conflicting versions of how he and the girl got together. He might have raped her, then maybe he didn't, and he thought he choked her to death with his hands, after which he prayed and vomited all over the apartment. Strange voices were telling him what to do. The details were a blur, and at one point Simmons said, "It seemed like a dream." Oddly, at this point, Smith and Rogers did not get excited over the prospect of yet another dream confession. When pressed on why he had waited almost 5 years to come forward, he was finally able to explain that all the recent gossip around town had led him to remember that fateful night back in 1982, or maybe it was 1981. But he couldn't recall how he entered Debbie's apartment, or how many rooms it had, or in which room he killed her. Then, suddenly, he remembered the ketchup bottle and scrawling words on the wall. Later, he said a friend at work had been talking about the details. Simmons claimed to be clean and sober during the confession, but it was obvious to Smith and Rogers that the crank had taken its toll. They dismissed his story immediately. Though it had as many inaccuracies as Tommy Ward's, the detectives were not impressed. Smith finally heard enough and announced, "In my opinion, you didn't kill Debbie Carter." Then he offered to get counseling for Simmons. Simmons, confused even further, insisted that he had killed her. The two detectives insisted he had not. They thanked him for his time and sent him away.